Lord, come quickly. Alleluia.
Well, we've already welcomed each one of you, but we want to welcome you again. I want to have that privilege. It's so great to have you back and to be once again associated with you. Mamas and daddies, we're glad you're here with us. Sorry you can't stay, but we're going to have a great year together this year. We're so happy that you brought your sweet kiddies and let us have them. It's wonderful to be a part of each other, and we're so thankful that we can be a part of you. There's one announcement or two that needs to be made. Brother Petway, Guy Petway, is in the White County Hospital, has been since last Sunday. He has pulmonary thrombosis. And remember him in your prayers, and if you can, visit him and send him a card, perhaps. Guy Petway. Clara Lee Franks needs a ride back to Memphis this afternoon. If you can accommodate her, please see me after we're dismissed. A long time ago, one of the men of God summoned all the nation of Israel to a mountain just south of present-day Haifa called Mount Carmel. And on that mountain, he made them make a choice. He said, "Why do you go limping between the two sides? If Jehovah is God, then follow him. If Baal is God, follow him." And the record says, and the people answered him not a word. That was because there was no word that could be answered. What was the answer? He had asked them to do something that was not out of the ordinary, out of the way. He said, either get in or get out, either get on or get off, either ship up or shape up or ship out. And he just simply said, the time has come to decide, and you need to quit this indecision. If you've ever traveled along the highways of America, especially before the freeways were made, I'm sure you've had this experience. You go along the road and there are hundreds of these little side dirt roads going off to the side, you know, that aren't of any real significance. And in fact, you don't even stop to think about it. You just pass them on by because your destination is way on down the road. But then there are dozens of blacktop roads that are of a bit more importance. And you see them, and you register them, of course, in your mind, but you really don't stop at every one of them and decide, now, is this the one I want? Because your destination's way on down the road. But occasionally, there comes a major intersection, and it's so large an intersection that you give it serious consideration. You may even stop your car and get out your map and confirm your destiny or your destination. And then, having made the decision, you go on your way with decisiveness and with confidence. Now, life is like that. There are so many decisions that you've got to make in life. There are a lot of small dirt road decisions that really you don't really stop to think about. You certainly don't stop your car every time one of them comes along and you find out whether or not that's the road. You know it's not. And then there are some blacktop road decisions that, though they're a bit more important, you still know that they're not the ones. That's not the road. I'm on the right road. But then you come to some major intersections in life that literally have to be considered with all seriousness. And you stop, perhaps, your car, and you get your map out, your road map of life, and you weigh the alternatives, and you decide whether or not you're on the right road or whether you need to go to the right or to the left. And having come to that decision, then you say, well, this is the road I need to be on, and you go on your way having made your decision. Young people, it's at points like this in your life where you show yourself for what you are, in a sense, but not so much for what you are as you determine for yourself what you're going to be in the future. And let me say, you're there now. You're right here today. Welcome to the ranks of adult life. You're here. Now, most of the decisions in your past life, I think, at times at least, your parents made. They made for you. And they may have made the decision for you to come to Harding College. I don't know. And some of you may really be here against your wishes. I'll give you about 3 days, and then we couldn't drive you off with a stick. But your parents may have been the one to make that decision. But now that you're here, you're going to have to be the one to make the decisions yourself. They're not going to be here to look over you. They're not going to be here to check on you. It's up to you as to what direction and course your life takes from now on. The ability to decide is one of God's greatest gifts to man. The opportunity to decide is one of America's most cherished freedoms. The responsibility to decide is one of life's most sobering obligations. How are you coming in your decision making? Let me say this, the decisions affect every phase of your life. And I guess as much as any other one single thing, they indicate a sanity and a presence of mind. The ability to decide does, I guess, as much as anything else. One sign of it being incapable of groping with life or grappling with it is this inability to make a decision. There are some areas where we all hesitate in making decisions. I don't go to cafeterias for that very reason. I just don't want the decision. But there are a lot of decisions that are small, there are a lot of decisions that are large, and sometimes we get them confused. Like the man bragging to his friend about the agreement that his wife and he had made. He said, "My wife and I have come to an agreement. I'm going to make all the major decisions, and she's going to make all the minor ones." His friend said, "Yeah, like what?" He said, "Well, she decides whether we buy a new house or a new car. I decide whether we go to war with China and things like that." She sure had him bulldozed, didn't she? When I was a freshman in Memphis State University, it was Memphis State College then, some faculty representative had the gall and the audacity to stand up before the freshman student body and say, "The most important decision that you have to make as a freshman this year is what you're going to wear to the freshman ball." Oh, that just literally infuriated me, and I wrote a term paper on it. And I just simply said, since when would what I wear to the freshman ball ever be the most important decision that I'd make as a freshman or anything else? And this English professor wrote across there, "Good work." He didn't think it was the most important decision either. But there are some insignificant decisions that rank about on the same level as that you're going to have to make this year. You're going to have to decide when to change your sheets. I'm serious. Right. Some of you boys will change your sheets once a semester whether you need it or not. I know, because I did that. I used to change them once a quarter. I wasn't prepared to make that decision. You're going to have to decide how often to bathe. Your mother and daddy used to make that decision for you, perhaps. You'd have to decide how many dates to have. And if you don't decide about the bathing, the other settles itself, you know. But these are some decisions now that you're in the driver's seat, you're going to have to decide about. You're going to decide about the length of your hair, you men. That's really a minor decision. I mean by that, if you don't keep it the right length, they send you off to the mines. And they certainly will keep check on you. I don't know what the penalty for infraction of the rule is for modest dress. I never have seen it applied around here or enforced. Not all that much, but really, when it comes right down to it, you boys keeping your hair trimmed and you girls keeping your dress modest, you know it's going to depend just about upon you and your obedience to Christ and your doing what is ordinarily accepted as being right. Did you ever have to take care of 2,300 children at one time? No, and it's not a very easy job. The decision is going to be upon you, and you'll probably be able to get away by putting your hair behind your ears, you know, when a teacher comes along, and then when he goes by, you shake your head and get rid of it. Whenever the teachers are around, you unroll your skirt and let it back down, and then when they get gone, you roll her back up. Some of these are very minor decisions. But then there are some major decisions. Whether you're going to follow Jesus Christ and how far. Whether you're going to have any secret rooms in your heart where you say, "Well, now this is mine, it's private. Nobody else is allowed. Christ isn't allowed here. I don't want this room cleaned out." That's a major decision. Your coming to this college is a major decision. Your worshiping with this congregation, I think, is a major decision in your life. You get to associate with the great men and women who've been off in the mission fields and the older people. We've got such a great army of old people here. They're older. They're not old. They're still in the fight. But all these things are important, major decisions. The one you choose as your wife, your major field. These things could be ranked as major decisions, and you're going to have to make up your mind about them. I hope you make the right choice. But understand this, that decisions precede all rational action. You know, very few of our bodily actions are the result of spasms. Most of them are the result of actual deciding what you're going to do and then doing it. And so it is in your Christian life. Everything that you do, every rational action, is a result of a decision that you've made. Wasn't it Caesar, when he reported about his conquest of Gaul, wasn't it Caesar that said, "I came, I saw, I conquered"? I think that was the occasion. We used to study it in Latin. There's a similar occasion back in the book of Joshua, chapter 7 and verse 20 and 21, where Achan, explaining his sin at the city of Jericho, explaining it to Joshua, said, "Here's what I did. I saw, I coveted, and I took." And these two decisions by the Caesar and by Achan, and Achan's was a much earlier decision than the Caesar was, "But I came, I saw, and I conquered. I saw, I coveted, and I took." You see, these two decisions just bristle, or these two occasions just bristle with decision. These two men had weighed the alternatives. They had seen something that they wanted, and then they decided that they would take it. Achan took the gold mantle, the gold and the Babylonian mantle, and then the Caesar took Gaul. And both of them are just characterized through and through by decision. And it makes you and helps you understand what Jesus Christ meant when in Mark the 7th chapter he makes this statement: "For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, fornication, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, foolishness." All these evil things come from within, and they defile a man. They not only defile a man, there's a step back beyond before that. They determine the man. And the nature of these things in determining the man defile the man. And Jesus said that's where your real problem is. It lies in this point of decision. And let me say this to you students this morning. If in this coming year you find that you're loose in your morals, if you find yourself cheating on tests, if you find yourself lying, if you find yourself being lazy and being a poor student, you know why you'll be those things? Because you have decided that you're going to be loose in your morals, you're going to cheat on tests, you've decided that you're going to lie, you've decided that you're going to be lazy and a poor student. That's the only reason why you'll be these things. Or it may be that simply that you've decided that you'll not decide to be anything different from what you've been. You may just fail to decide something. You may just say, "Well, I've been this all my life, and I just don't want to fool. Don't want to worry about it." And so you just fail to decide to be anything different. But I don't know what you may be, but I know why you will be. You will be what you will because you've decided to be that. Because decisions actually shape and mold our life. When I think about that, I think about men like Joseph, the great Joseph. I don't know of a man in the Bible other than the Lord that so thrills me as to consider the life of Joseph. When Joseph was 17 years old, and a lot of you are 17 today, when Joseph was 17, his brothers shipped him off to Egypt, to either Memphis or Thebes, paid all of his expenses, shipped him down there to the school of hard knocks, the University of Hard Knocks. When he got down there, there was this upperclassman who tempted him. And it wasn't just once. She tempted him day in and day out and kept worrying him down and worrying him until the scene was set just right. And here was this boy, 17 years old, away from home. His brothers hated his guts. His mother and daddy thought he was dead. Nobody knew who Joseph was. The God of his mother and father could have been left back in Egypt or back in Canaan as far as some people are concerned. But here this boy was, and here this Cyrene tempts him, and all the things are laid out there before him. He could have taken advantage of all of it. But Joseph said, "No, how can I do this thing against my God and against your husband? How can I sin this great sin?" He was a great man of decision. I think about Moses, who was taken after he was weaned and put into a society different from what he really had been raised up to be as a Hebrew. And he was placed in a position of such importance and so much money and so much of everything that he could have possibly desired. And yet Moses remembered what his mother and daddy had taught him while he had been at home. I think about Daniel, who saw everything that had been familiar to him destroyed, the city of Jerusalem destroyed, many of his friends killed, and his whole world just simply crumbled beneath him. And he was taken off into Babylonia, and everything around him was strange. Strange gods, strange food, strange people, strange everything, strange attitudes. And there he and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were their Babylonian names. These four boys stood up essentially and said, well, I don't care what you may say to us. We don't care if it takes our life. We don't care if you kill us. We don't care what you do. We're going to serve Jehovah, and nothing you can say is going to make us change our minds. Daniel expressed it well when he prayed. He went as his custom was and opened his windows and prayed toward Jerusalem, and they knew he was going to do it, and he probably knew they were watching him, but he didn't care. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said this, we've got a God that we serve, and he's able to save us. And we don't care whether he saves us or not, really. If he decides not to, that's all right. We're going to still serve him, and we're not going to bow down to your golden image. These men made decisions and how it molded their lives. I think about the teenager Joshua. Actually, he was in his early 20s when he crossed the Jordan River, or crossed the Red Sea, and made his decision as they sent him out as a spy into the land of Canaan. And he came back and showed his great faith in God and said, we can take it. God has said for us to go in. It's ours. Let's go. And they nearly stoned him and Caleb. And later on, however, this decision that Joshua made, later on, some 40 years later, equipped him to be the great ruler of the people of Israel. And he took the generalship from Moses. As Moses died, it was given to Joshua. And Joshua was in the process of getting there by this decision that he made. Isn't it tremendous what decisions do for you? You see, we also think not only of these men, but I think also of Judas and the decision that he made and what an effect it had on his life. He committed suicide because of his decision. I think also of the Haldemans and the Ehrlichmans and the Deans and the other Watergate defendants who, because of decisions, are now reaping the consequences of having chosen what was wrong. But young people, make no doubt about it. Decisions are stepping stones to either success or failure. They're either building blocks to success or they're stepping stones to failure. And I think often that the great battles of life that are fought, I'm not talking about theological or ideological battles right now. I'm thinking about the great physical battles of war that are won or lost. You know, they're not won or lost on the battlefield, really. They're won or lost primarily in the mind of the general and the decisions that he has to make and the wisdom of his decision. That's where the battle is either won or lost. And I think also in your life as Christians, you know where your battle for Christ is won or lost? It's won before you get there. Boy, I realized that recently. Again and again, I've realized it, that the battle to serve Jesus Christ and the temptation of sin, that battle is won or lost before we get to it. Simon Peter made the statement in 1 Peter 3:15 when he said, sanctify in your hearts Christ as Lord and be ready. You see, he says, get ready before you get there. When people ask you and when you're tested and why are you acting like this and why is this, he said, sanctify in your hearts Christ as Lord and then you'll be ready. There was a young girl living across from us in West Columbia, South Carolina. A lovely girl. We just loved her. She kind of became part of our family. When she became 16 years old, I took her aside and sat down and said, now, Martha, you're going to be dating in these next few years. You're going to be finding your life's mate. I said, let me give you a good word of advice. Settle in your own heart what your moral standard is going to be before you start dating. Don't wait until you start dating. Don't wait until you're on the back seat of a car before you decide what your moral standard is going to be. Decide what it's going to be, and then you'll already have the answer. Then you'll already have the victory. She said, that makes sense. And it does make sense. Decisions make your life. They mold and make your life what it will be. W.B. West tells about two young men in Nashville, Tennessee, teenagers, 16 or 17 years old. One of them, Bill, said, I'm going to church this morning. Pete said, oh, let's not go to church. Let's go get a drink and have some fun. And he tells this, and he says it's a true story. He can't document it, but I suspect it is. If it's not, it can be documented in 1,000 other cities in the United States and the world. But these two boys went their separate ways. One went to worship God, and one went to get something to drink, some liquor. Years passed by. One of them became a Christian. He married a good Christian wife. He finally became an elder in the church. Raised Christian family. And all of his life was characterized by devotion to Jesus Christ. This other boy, Pete, went away and followed the course of drink. It ruined his life, destroyed his marriage, ruined his children, ruined his business. These men met some 15 or 20 or 25 years later in the city of Memphis, Tennessee. One of them, the one that had become a Christian, was walking down the street. This other man that had not become a Christian recognized him. He didn't recognize the other fellow because he was there as a drunken bum, a person begging for something to eat. And here these two men stood. And you know what? They could look back. One confronted the other and said, I remember the day we made that decision. And look at the difference that it's made. You'll be able to look back on your life at some point where you say, you know, that's where I made my decision. That's where I went right, or that's where I went wrong. And it's so important. Oh, how I'd love to beg you and plead with you. Do what's right. Make sure that your decisions are right. I look back on my life at decisions that are key decisions in my life. The decision that I made to go to a Christian school was one of the most key decisions of my entire life. My father still refers to it as the day when he breathed easy. That's right. And I can understand why. I sold an old car, decided I was going to go off to a Christian school, and he points to it today, and he says, that's the day, sir. And I said, yeah, I know. It took me a while to get straightened around even then, but I made the choice, and I made that decision. And you've made it too. And there are going to be decisions that you'll have to continue to make because of the fact that God has placed this upon you. There are decisions that you must make, and all these decisions, you see, won't wait. In fact, none of them will really wait. Each decision has its own time to be made. And as in spite of the fact that Felix asked for a more convenient time, that's not really possible. You see, to refuse to decide is actually to decide. And if you choose to not decide, then you've already decided. And time will eventually settle all of your decisions. If you wish, just don't decide to do anything. Just decide to be indecisive, and time will decide for you. And then you'll become the victim of circumstances and the victim of time. Let me tell you this, there aren't any decisions after death. You think about it. No more decisions after death that you're responsible for, that you can make. There's some decisions that God's made for you that you won't have to make, really. There's a decision about death. It's appointed unto man once to die. You don't have any choice about that. Your only decision is whether or not you'll die prepared or unprepared. What have you decided about that? The decision about the judgment really has been made by God. It's not left up to you. You're going to be there. The only decision you have to make in the matter is whether you're going to stand on his right hand or his left. And that's about up to you. He's made the way for you to be on his right hand. But you're deciding now. Whether you serve Jesus Christ is not really a decision that you have to make. It's been made for you. You're going to confess him one day. Paul said to the Philippians that every knee is going to bow, and every knee is going to bow, and every tongue is going to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. You don't have any choice in the matter. I don't either. The only decision that you can make is whether or not you're going to choose to serve him and acknowledge him now, or wait until you're forced to at the day of judgment. If you do it now, he'll bless you. If you wait until he has to force you to do it, then you'll be cursed. Have you made your decision? You're making it. My wife's mother made a statement to a class of hers not long ago and said this, and it's worth passing on to you. She said, in your decisions, never get yourself into a position where you can't go to heaven from where you are. Oh, that makes sense, doesn't it? Could you go to heaven from where you are right now? Could you? It's so important. What's your decision? If you're not a Christian, you'd be lost. But it's so simple. He loves us so much, he's made it easy for us to decide. If you want to become a Christian, you can. You can decide right now to become one. Many of you should. Would you go to heaven from where you are right now? Never get yourself into a position where you couldn't go to heaven from where you are. But it's your decision. You'll have to make it. This is your hour of decision, and I hope you'll come as we stand and sing. Would you come and confess your faith, or whatever may be your need?
My life, my love.